to the International House of Horrors.
Hello, valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors podcast, your sanctuary spooky for all things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre. And I am one of your curators here at the house, Joe Merle, and today I've got a special guest with me. Anybody who's listened to this show or my other show, listen to those Movie Guys podcast, maybe we'll know him by sometimes Phil, but his name is Phil. Phil and I have been friends for a long time. He is the amazing host of My Celluloid Heart podcast, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit once we get into the show. But Phil, welcome to the International House of Horrors.
See, you set me up backwards because I was going to be like, and I'm the other one. I am Philip.
So, yeah, I never know how I'm going to go into it. You know, podcast things, sometimes I just roll with it. Sometimes exactly. I just go. I don't always plan a ton about what everything's going to be. But yeah, man, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've never been on IHOH. You were on mine, but I've never been on any of your podcasts. So.
Oh, that's right. What did you and I do? We did
Ed Gein. Yeah.
Yeah.
Psycho.
Ed Gein-inspired stories. Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs. And
Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah. Which, by the way, why is my sound cutting out? I was watching a, what was the movie? I was watching Rolling Thunder, and it had, Frederick in it. Was his name Freddie or Frankie?
Franklin. Yeah.
Had Franklin in it.
Yeah. Oh, really? He was in Rolling Thunder? Is he in a wheelchair or no?
No. Oh, okay. He was like a cop because, I was like, well, wait, maybe he's the guy in the wheelchair. And it was like, oh.
It's a Christmas miracle. Franklin got his legs back.
Exactly.
I love Franklin. Sheena gets mad at me because I make fun of him. But Franklin in that movie, when he's like, oh, we're going to have fun. And he's just spitting at the ceiling. Come on, Franklin. It'll be great. Come on, Franklin.
Well, and like I said, even making the movie, like we talked about on my show, but when he's wheeling through and he gets caught up in some brush.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if I was a director, I'd be like, okay, cut. Let's get him through that brush. But they let him fight with it for a while and finally get through it. It's like, oh, my God.
Come on, Franklin. Yeah. Man. It is a long time coming. We're going to have to get you on the other show sometime soon, too. But this one, we were going to do it a couple weeks ago, but you had just had your surgery and just didn't want to put any kind of strain on, you know, your vocal cords because they are so much attached to the nasal passageway. So I was lucky enough to get Jay Burt to come over, do an episode with me. But I was happy when, because Josh was here last weekend and we had an amazing time, hung out, did some things and just had a really great, and it's really weird. I talked to you. You know, Phil about it quite a bit. And I was like, I never in a million years imagined that I would start a podcast, A, with a guy from Germany that I met just and we shared a love of horror movies. And then B, he would come over and be staying the entire weekend. But he is actually traveling. I just sent him a message or talked to him just a couple minutes ago before we started. And they're at the airport right now in Chicago getting ready to. Yeah. And he's like, well, I get back late Saturday so we could record Sunday. He's got to go to work on Monday. I'm like, after 9, 10, 12 hours of international flight, I don't think the first thing you're going to want to do is jump, sit down and do a podcast.
Yeah.
So I was like, don't worry about it. Well, we'll take care of it, man. And, and you and I, you know, we've become fast friends. I feel like it's been a while now. Yeah, I don't know how long we've known each other, but it feels like it's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been since like around less than episode 100 of those Movie Guys.
Yeah, and I started listening. Yeah, and we're almost at 200 now, so it's been been a little bit.
Yeah,
but you started to explore a little bit more give me a little bit more about your relationship with horror because I know you didn't watch it a ton. You watched it, but not a whole bunch. But then once we started doing this, you started exploring a little bit more.
Right. Well, and I started realizing like because I don't like you and I talked about. Like my wife doesn't like the ghost stuff. I more like the Freddy, the Jason, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And Mike Myers, before you go, Mike Myers, don't forget him.
Right.
And I love that part on Baby Driver, Mike Myers mask. but I like I've told the story about the thing. Nobody of your audience heard it, but on the thing, when I was little, we got it on beta and my parents rented it and they said, let's watch it. And they didn't know what it was. My dad just knew it had Kurt Russell in it. So we get on, we start watching it, and all of a sudden that dog splits open and I'm like, and I know that in my head, you always hear about don't show kids scary movies because they'll wake up, they'll have nightmares.
Yeah.
So automatically I'm telling myself, maybe I don't want to finish watching this
because I'm going to have nightmares.
So I said, I'm going to go in the other room, or they sent me in the other room. So I went in the living room and I watched like the Newhart show or whatever, Bob Newhart. Yeah. And I had that's above me. Like I had no idea what the humor was.
Just anything was just, to get your mind off.
I was
off
like,
of.
Come on, make me laugh, do something. But that was one. I saw the Friday 13th Nightmare on Elm Streets when they came out. And then right around in the late 80s, I went and saw, because that's what was weird, is how long ago some of these movies come out. And I feel like it was just the other day.
Yeah.
So I remember going to see like Jason Takes Manhattan.
So that would have been, 89.
The one with Arnold Horshack. And I remember watching that one and I was like, oh, that's, you know, it seemed like just the other day, but it was, you know, 87, 88.
You know what's really weird about Jason is I've gone back and, you know, thought about it and I've seen those movies more times than I could ever try to count. But with Jason, you know, when we were in the throes of the Saw franchise, and every Halloween, it was a new Saw movie. Between 1980 and 1989, they made 8 Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
I feel like those are so much more iconic than the Saw movies, even though they're just as ridiculous. They go just as far. I think Jason does get really good. I'm a huge fan of 6 and 7. I think 6 is a lot of people's favorites. 4 is a good one, but the whole Tommy Jarvis trilogy. But it's weird to think that you were getting a Friday the 13th almost every year for a decade.
Yeah, and I told you recently when they were all on Amazon Prime, and I was like, I'm going to watch one. I'll watch the first one. I haven't seen it for a while. Next thing I know, I go, I got all night. I might as well just 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
And then my wife's like, do they have the rest? Maybe we got to go rent, you know, Jason 10 and, you know, Jason vs. Freddy.
Yeah, because it was Jason Goes to Hell is when it switched over to, who was it, New Line?
To the Dimension or New
was
Line?
It, I think it was New Line. Because New Line had Freddy, and that's when they put the glove in, was in Jason Goes to Hell. And then, Space Jason was bad. But that was many years later. That was like 2001.
Yeah, 2003 or something.
Yeah, it was much later on.
But no, I like horror, but I don't like all those Conjuring stuff. They're okay, and I like the real stories of it. Like, I used to listen to the podcast Lore.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all those, it was like 20-minute little things. But they had like Robert the Doll. And then they did a thing on it on the Amazon show for Lore, and they talked about the Robert Doll.
Yeah, I never watched the Amazon show. I used to listen to the podcast, but I never watched the show.
And the Robert Doll is pretty creepy when you go, well, what made this kid? Like, he's talking to the doll, and is the doll possessed, you know, whatever. By the way, your daughter's name's Annabelle. I just saw at Walmart. You might want to check it out. They have an Annabelle, like, double collection, and it's got a mini Funko Pop
with it.
So...
I think I've got like 3 or 4 Funkos that they put out. For.
I just thought that little mini was pretty cool.
Yeah, the little ones are always cool that come with the sets of movies. And I just picked up the Annabelle Comes Home hit video on demand, and I enjoyed that one quite. But we've got a big Annabelle. I've got a huge Annabelle doll, and then I think it was Trick or Treat Studios this year is doing one, but it's $500.
I was gonna say you didn't buy that one.
I didn't buy the $500 one because shit, that's expensive. But I did go to Halloween City. I took Josh, which is really interesting. In Germany, they really don't do Halloween. Like, there's no trick or treating, no anything. And I was like, he's like, we were driving up here from down by Detroit. He's like, we kept passing these stores that were like Halloween City and Spirit Halloween. He's like, what is that? And I said, what do you mean, what is that? I was like, they're everywhere. And so we went into one, and he was just like kid in a candy store. It was just like, oh, this is great. Like, I actually get to, you know, wander around and look at it. And they had a lot of the animated stuff set up, you know, where you could step on the little pads and get them going. So we had a good time doing that. But yeah, you've, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you've watched since you and I started talking. It's like, man, he's getting into some really good, some of the classic stuff.
Well, and then like the classic stuff, I used to think like, I love old movies, but for some reason I would go, Universal. It's like, that's older. Give me some newer horror. Like, it's not real scary, whatever. But being as I love old movies, I told my wife, I go, we got to get this 30 movie collection of all of those. And it comes with the Abbott and Costello ones too,
which are so much fun.
So I'm like, we got to get those. And, even though as they go, they get worse, you know, the Invisible Man Returns is good, but then there's the Invisible Agent.
Once you get to like the fifth and sixth movies in those series, they were, you know, it's the same thing people do now. It's a name you can capitalize on.
Yeah.
That people, there were, I think, I want to say probably Frankenstein had the most good ones in the whole run. Like, I really like Son. I really like Bride. Yeah. You know, there were some good Draculas as well. But one of the best ones, and I don't know if you've seen it. I want to say it might be on Prime over here. It might not be. I think I bought it for like $10. But it's, which I had never seen, and Josh and I did maybe a month or so ago where he started working through that 101 horror movies to see before you die. The Frederick March Jekyll and Hyde is still terrifying. Have you seen that one?
I looked it up, but I had to find it on iTunes like you did.
Yeah. Oh.
So I was thinking about checking it out. I was going to tell you that you should have showed that to him when he was there.
Yeah, we ended up watching the one that he couldn't get that we watched together while he was here was The Black Cat.
I was going to say, I did watch A Black Cat the other day.
Oh, did you? What'd you think?
Yeah, it was really good. Right? I liked it. They're good together, and you hear like that they hated each other, but then I heard like, no, they liked each other. So,
and I was just listening. We talked right before we started recording about Rob Zombie on Joe Rogan. A friend of mine had sent me over a link, and he said, gotta listen to this episode. It's really good. Cause I don't normally listen to Rogan.
Yeah.
But I'm a huge Rob Zombie fan, and he was talking about, and after he had said something, when I rewatched The Black Cat, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. He's like, these two guys, Karloff and Lugosi, were on a whole nother level. Like, everybody else in the movie is still, like, very vaudevillian and kind of over the top. And these dudes have an intensity like no other. But what got me about The Black Cat was I was like, holy shit, in 1934, they were skinning a person alive.
Yeah.
And yet, and they don't show it. But the audience at the time had to have been like, what the fuck? Like, this is crazy. You know, this is nuts. They just filleted this guy.
Yeah, it was just, I was like, oh my God, are they going to do that?
Right,
like,
are they really? And the idea that Karloff had taken this girl, raised her, pulled a Woody Allen, raised this kid, and then ends up, he's in bed with her, like, you stay in here all day. Don't leave the room. He was just, I love Lugosi's reactions, though, when he sees the cat. Like falling into the wall, terrified. Dropping the gun, everything.
No, it was, like you said before, like, Boris Karloff and, you know, The Mummy, even though there's not much to it, like there's something with him, you know, just, he's just great. And I don't think he gets enough credit. And I think Boris Karloff the other one, the
Lugosi?
Hungarian guy, Lugosi outshined Boris Karloff is what I think, maybe, you know, because then later Boris, I mean, they both then were doing shitty movies at the end of their career, but that's what sucks. That's where you need a Quentin Tarantino back then to put him in like something really cool.
Well, best you had was Ed Wood, who tried.
Yeah, yeah.
Tried to bring. Yeah,
fighting with that octopus.
Right, tried to bring Lugosi back. And the you're right, those guys. You know, I really like Karloff, though, his voiceover in the animated Grinch movie. Mm-hmm. The cartoon, the TV special.
Yeah, yeah.
Is always super good. But, yeah, man, you've been jumping on, doing a bunch of horror stuff. So, watch Jekyll and Hyde with Frederick March.
Yeah.
To this day, when I was watching, and, you know, I've watched so many fucked up things. Like, really horrible, terrible things. And that movie got under my skin the way he was, like, his performance is worth whatever it costs on iTunes or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Cause it's
and just the way I found it on, I found the other one on YouTube. Was that on YouTube? Anyway, I found it on YouTube because remember I found the other one and it was from 50s or 40s.
Right.
Yeah. Then I found that one, but yeah, I enjoyed it because you didn't know where it was going. Like, who are these guys? Like, and then Karloff shows up and you're like, wait, what the hell?
Yeah.
And then it's like, just weird and cool. It's almost like, the old dark house, but with more stuff going on.
Like, I love the old dark house.
Really cool. Yeah.
I love the way the car slides off during the rainstorm.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Well, and that's why I thought of that, because they were driving, they got in another rainstorm, and then they're stuck at a house, and, you know.
And those old set pieces are just so much fun, like the sound stages. Okay, but so why we are here today, though, what we are going to do today, you and I talked a little bit, and we both share a love of the Criterion Channel. You got it way before I did, and you kept telling me. You're like, you got to get on this, man. There's so many good things. Got to get on this.
So much stuff.
Then I held off. Part of it was I just had so many streaming services going on at the same time. And then when I finally got rid of the website for those movie guys that I was, you know, it was like $30 or $40 a month I was paying for that. I was like, well, now it doesn't seem like so much, you know, it's just kind of moving the money around. It's like, which streaming services? Phil did a great job explaining it. He's like, you just have one pot of money and you figure out, okay, this is on this one, this is on this one. What do I want to watch? You know, take it and go. So I finally ended up, I've had it for a few months now and been watching a ton of it. So many great things on there. But, you know, you absolutely love the Criterion Channel as well. So we decided, why don't we do Criterion Horror?
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say about the Criterion Channel that I'm not a huge fan of is I have yet to find a way to search by genre. And I wish they had a filter on my Apple TV, or even I feel like on my phone, I can't even really search by genre.
Yeah, I had to do it through my laptop, go to their website, and then at the top of the website, it'll say all films. Then you can click on all films and go through it alphabetically.
Okay. But even still, I wish there was just a horror button.
And then, then I went in there and I hit horror.
Oh, okay.
And it had sci-fi, horror, action, all that. But I noticed on some of those that I wrote down, some were like 9 minute, a short film, right, or a 15 minute short film. And I was like, oh, because after I watched these two, I was like, I'm going to watch another one. And I went to look and I'm like, okay, that's short. And then I'm like, wait, I just bought The Predator last night. I'm going to watch that. So nice. I started to watch that.
And maybe for someone who's unfamiliar, the Criterion organization. So you have Criterion and Janus Films. And Janus does from what I understand, Janus does all of the theatrical releases and public showcasing of these classic movies. Maybe some of them aren't even, I don't know how you would define classic, but how they define it is a movie that, in its right, is substantial enough and important enough and unique enough in its own genre or whatever it is. And we're going to get into one that's a weird fucking genre.
Yeah.
But it's important enough in its own genre. And they even, you know, some of them are B movies. Some of them are great Hollywood blockbusters. It really, as long as it holds like cultural relevance in its own certain space, then they find, you know, the best copy they can and try and restore it to the highest standard possible.
Yeah.
And so Janus distributes them, and then Criterion does more of the DVD, Blu-ray, home distribution. But they're essentially the same, you know, two wings of the same bird.
Yeah. But what's interesting about that, though, is before I used to think Criterion was like the best of the best, or like a foreign film or something really good or whatever. And then you find stuff on there, like I said, that one, A Fiend Without a Face.
Yeah.
The little, that's a brain that kills people.
Yeah, I love that movie.
You're like, oh, okay, I guess this is part of Criterion. But like you said, it's something that's unique or something, you know.
Yeah.
And what's cool about the channel, if you love film, is they have a Martin Scorsese section of movies from around the world. And he'll have like, you know, he'll go into like these different films that are spotlighted that you normally wouldn't even check out, but
I love all the extra stuff you get on the channel. Like it'll be, you know, the, like you said, you were going through Barbara Stanwyck recently. I've been kind of working through Ida Lupino, and there'll be like a 10-12 minute little thing at the beginning with someone talking about why this, or a history of this person, what they did, what their contributions were, which is super cool.
And even with the DVDs, you get all that added stuff, and sometimes on there, Criterion will just have the movie.
Right.
But like with High Noon, it's got the movie, it's got a little, you know, an essay, video essay, it's got all this stuff.
The hard thing with Criterion is to buy the Blu-rays and DVDs is not cheap.
Yeah, they're like $30 on Blu-ray.
Almost all of them. You don't find cheap Criterion versions, which I do understand because, you know, they're essentially trying to remaster some of this stuff and add all this stuff in, so it's got to be costly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't have, I think, as big of an audience for Criterion as you do for, say, the Avengers. It's a different market.
And they always have a different, they do a different cover for it, and that's always cool.
Yeah, you get some really cool ones.
Yeah.
In there. So we decided to do a couple movies from the Criterion Channel. Yeah. And you picked one, I picked one. And having you on the show, I was like, well, why don't we do something kind of like Phil's show? Because that's normally what you do. And, you know, I'll let you get a good plug in at the end. But usually take a couple, two or three movies and piece them together. Something maybe around a theme or out of the same series. And so let's do Criterion Horror. Yeah. And you immediately threw out, you were like, let's do The Lure. Which is one that when I saw the trailer for initially, because it's just a few years old. When I saw the trailer initially, I had wanted to see. I remember Phil and I talking about it. I was like, this is a weird fucking idea. Like, this is super strange. And after that, I said, I just looked through. You were kind enough to send over a big list of all these movies. And I just picked by title. And I went, okay, Hour of the Wolf.
Yeah.
So those are the two we're gonna discuss today. And
I felt the same way about The Lure. I was like, that looks so cool and different. And everybody I told about it were like, oh, it's a musical and it's Polish and it's like it's like Little Mermaid. Oh, that sounds great.
Sounds fantastic. I'm like, cool. And so we'll start with The Lure. So The Lure was released in 20. Well, I don't know if it was released, but it was at least made. I think it was released in 2015.
Yeah.
And it's credited as a horror musical. But I think that I would almost put comedy in there as well, because there's a lot of great comedy elements. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the director's name, because there's no fucking way.
It was all Polish. At the end, I was like, you couldn't even tell who was who.
Right.
Because all the names were like a bunch of consonants.
And so, like you said, this is a kind of a reimagining, a reworking of the Hans Christian Andersen, The Little Mermaid. But this is not like any Little Mermaid you've ever seen. And when I was thinking about what makes a Criterion movie, I was like, okay, is this just on there because it's the only mermaid horror musical comedy in existence? Is it the only one out there? I did not dislike this movie, but it is a weird fucking movie.
The other one is, that's another thing. We'll get there later, but. Yeah, The Lure was, you know, I had some notes. The opening, when it cuts right to the title sequence, that was cool.
Then, I really like the title sequence, the kind of almost like cardboard or paper animation.
Almost like a Wes Anderson type.
A good way to put it. Very Wes Anderson. Yeah.
And then I loved all the colors and the set design. Like everything was like in green hues or like, you know.
Very kind of aquatic feel.
Yeah. And also like a... Maybe not as quite as Suspiria, but I was thinking that too with the greens and the whites, but it wasn't like Suspiria.
No, Suspiria is such an intense lighting. You know, it's like very hard.
Yeah,
red
it was all red or all blue. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just, another one of my notes was that the teeth don't show up until she shows her teeth. Cause I was like, I knew that from the trailer. But when she shows her teeth, I was like, I don't think we've seen this yet until all of a sudden, you know.
Once they actually, sharp, it seemed like it was a conscious thought that would bring the teeth out. Like they had to almost bring the teeth back out. You know, the movie starts, you just have this band of people. I think they were all a family. Were they?
I'm thinking the blonde kid was the son.
Of the woman,
Of the woman and the guy, because so they're just down by the beach. To be sad.
Yeah, they're just down by the beach singing, and all of a sudden we see a couple heads pop up, and that's one thing I really liked about this movie is I did enjoy all the music. It was almost hypnotic.
Yeah. It was really good, even though you didn't speak Polish or whatever. The lyrics, the music of it was really lyrical. Yeah.
Yeah. The sound was amazing. And they're playing music, some acoustic guitars, singing songs by the water. These two mermaids show up and the mermaids sing back and they're like, we promise we won't kill you if you bring us out of the water. And so they bring them out of the water. And in this, when they're dried out, when they lack any sort of water, then they turn into human legs. And this is the first point where I was like, this is fucking weird. When they're in the nightclub, and the manager of the club comes in. He's like, who are these two girls? And they're like, okay, take your clothes off. And then they both sit the girls down naked on the couch and they're like, spread your legs. And then they're like, look, they're just as flat as Barbie dolls.
Yeah, like, I was thinking that the guy would have them get naked and that either they would be normal naked and it was like, okay, now you're going to be in our show. But when he then turns them around too and says, look, and there's no buttholes.
Right.
And there's no vaginas.
Yeah, he like bends the one over. Like, he's like, look, there's nothing. And then he dumps the water on him. And the fin, like the effects of the fin, the prosthetics looked really good because they weren't, you know, small little fins. They were giant.
Yeah, it was like a big, like the end of a fish. It wasn't just like a mermaid with a tail. Yeah.
And it made me think of, did you ever see the SNL skit? It's been years with Reese Witherspoon, where she's the Little Mermaid.
And I might have, but I can't remember.
I can't remember who she's talking to. She's like, I'm human from the waist up, but it's all mackerel down there. And they really get into showing you, like, hey, here's where you would have sex with this if you wanted to put something inside of this fish, which is so weird, man.
Yeah, and it was like, it's like down, like off to the side. Like,
yeah.
And a fish that's down there. So, I mean, it makes sense.
I guess.
It was just weird where she's like, put it in me.
Right.
And that guy's like, and that's what I wrote, that one of my things was that the guy says, well, you're still an animal to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's heartbreaking for her because she's like, she loves him so much.
She's like, well, come at least kiss me one time. And then, but I feel like he ended up, I don't know if he did do it because it's very surreal in a lot of areas. That scene you're talking about in particular, where she pulls him into the bathtub, they end up almost like The Shape of Water, where they're completely underwater having this kind of romantic encounter. But now, what I didn't understand was when right after we first meet the two, did the club owner try to have sex with them? Because you remember the woman comes in and they're both like on the ground, bent over in their human forms.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah.
That was some of the stuff where I was like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know. Well, and then there was a thing where, like, they need water, and then they threw him in the pool. But it's like, he said, like, I put water on him, and it didn't work. And I'm thinking, chlorine water is going to be worse because fish can't live in chlorine.
Yeah.
So.
Like, this is going to kill these two.
But,
it was
just all weird with, then they have, what was cool about it was that they didn't have to go through a whole explanation of, these girls are mermaids. Oh my God. And
everyone's just
not hiding.
It.
It's not like Splash. It was just like, these are mermaids. When you get them wet, they turn into mermaids. And the guy's like, well, let's put them on the show and they can sing. And
they can sing and strip.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Then
you put them in a water glass or whatever it was. Yeah. But
they were essentially in a giant champagne glass. So they start with the show and then they become so loved that they become now the stars and everybody else in the band is the backup and they become the lure.
Yeah.
And I like the Triton character. I like that they brought in the idea of Triton and you have like this kind of punk rock, not really, I wouldn't call it metal at all. It was much more punk rock, but he was a merman, I guess, kind of like Zoolander. He was a merman. And he had ripped his horns off and he gives us the explanation that the two mermaids, they call them Silver and Golden. Silver and Golden.
Yeah.
And if she falls in love with a human and he marries someone else, by the next morning, she'll turn into Seafoam.
Was it? I think it was just if he doesn't love you back.
Yeah.
But then, then he ended up marrying somebody. But still, that was the weird stuff. Like, if you try to cut off your tail, you're going to lose your voice. And she's like, that's just a myth. That's what they say.
Right.
And it
wasn't
like,
that weird. Like the whole operation scene.
Yeah. I was like, is that girl alive? They just got her on ice. They don't have like any,
they don't have any oxygen,
no oxygen, no anesthesia.
They're not feeding blood into her. Nothing.
And then sewed her up. And then when the guy went to have sex with her, then he's like all bloody and
he's grossed out. I was like, well, first off, let the scar heal.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking she's got to heal first. And she's never had sex before. So she just like, you know.
Yeah, she was all excited about it. And I like that it really was just two people cut in half on these tables. And then they just switched the legs for the tail from one person to the other.
Yeah.
Which was really bizarre. But it was, and the rest of the time, the other sister, the one who's not in love, is starting to feed her bloodlust.
And that was what was weird because she went out, killed that one guy at the club,
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the cop is like, hey, I know what you did. And then she's
like,
that
was weird.
And then they make out and she put a gun to her head so she wouldn't bite her neck. They fool around. And then that cop never shows up again.
No. It's no, like, she's like,
it's like, is there any investigation going? Like, I thought, oh, now they're going to be a whole investigation.
Right. No, they don't investigate anything. They just, she takes her back to her and is like licking on her, which if you're going to lick a fish, I don't know why anyone ever would, but why would you lick the spine?
Yeah.
Like why not lick the, and I didn't fully understand the scale when she rips off one of her scales and gives it to him. What
it was
that?
For a guitar. It was his guitar pick. She was giving him a guitar pick. Yeah. And then he dropped it, then she woke up and was crying because he threw it away and.
Right.
Or gave it to the other girl or whatever. Yeah.
But even before that, we got the dad punching them both in the face, which is really weird. Like two fists, same time, two girls just wham.
Yeah.
Right in the face. I was like, okay, this is.
Yeah. It's like, holy shit.
This is really weird, man. Like this is. And so we end up at the end of this movie. And everything kind of transpires that, you know, it's kind of a self-sacrifice. The mermaid determines that. So she finds out she does have to kill this guy before sunrise.
Sunrise, yeah.
And so she determines that she's right there. She's dancing with him. She gets her big teeth out, got him near his neck, but doesn't go through with it and turns into seafoam. And his reaction was funny. He's like, what the fuck? Like, why am I covered in all of this? And then the sister... You know, out of an act of vengeance.
Revenge. Which is funny because I'm like, that girl sacrificed herself and then killed the guy anyway. Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
Which is kind of ironic. But yeah, she sacrifices herself so that he could live. Then the sister ends up killing him.
Yeah.
This is a super weird movie.
And it didn't go where I thought, you know, like you said, you watch the trailer and you think like, oh, it's going to be this one thing. Like, that's what it's going to be. But then it was different. I knew it'd be different, but this was like, I'm like.
Yeah, I expected almost like a, when they say, you know, they start with the cabaret and things like that, almost like a indentured servitude and them trying to have to fight their way out to some sort of freedom. But it wasn't that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it became all weird. And then I'm like, and the thing was, after Hour of the Wolf, I was like, this one will be good. And that one wasn't good. So, but like you said, it was good. Will I watch it again? No. Am I glad I watched it? Yeah. So I can say, okay.
Yeah, I'll never.
And like you and I said, like, I was telling Jason Bromley, I'm like, yeah, I watched, I'm going to watch Lure. And I'm going to watch, you know, this movie from, and he's like, and then I was telling him how I watch these other old movies. He's like, yeah, you lost me. 1934, Black Cat, nope. I'm like, all right.
Fucking Bromley. But this right here, David Ehrlich called it the best goth musical about man-eating mermaids ever made. And I would agree with that.
The only.
Right. Yeah. And it's probably the only movie about man-eating mermaids, musical about man-eating mermaids ever made. But I have to say, even as I was watching it, it is, you know, we live in this world where you get a lot of rehashed ideas. A lot of things are all the same.
Yeah.
This was a wholly original take on kind of the mermaid story, the Little Mermaid story.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, granted, it's still based on that Little Mermaid story with some parts, but the dude, like, if I was to explain that to you, like, hey, I'm thinking about making this movie. All right, tell me what you think.
Okay.
You got fucking mermaids that eat people, right?
Oh,
so they
awesome.
Find them, but they got no buttholes. They got no buttholes and no vaginas. And you got to dump water on them to grow the fins back, but then they become singers and strippers. Like itself.
You're like, okay, it's still weird and cool. All right. Yeah.
It's just such a ludicrous idea. Yeah. But somehow this guy made it work. I mean, and it really... For what it works really well.
Yeah. It looked good, but still at the end of it, you're going, well, now what's going to happen to the sister? Because then I thought they're going to follow her down and see her, you know. And
no,
there was
that
other guy, the brother or the family member of theirs that was like, had scars all over. He was like, oh, yeah, I got a hook here and I got this. And he knew all the rules, all the lore or whatever of the mermaids. And
because
so,
their goal was originally to swim to America.
Yeah.
Was kind of their end game.
Oh, yeah, because they were like, yeah, we'll start here and we'll go there.
Oh, and that's why they got punched, because they finally confront him, and they're like, we don't get any of the money. We're the stars of the show. You don't give us anything. You keep everything. He's like, yeah. Oh, but your kids. And then one of them says something, and he's just like, wham.
Yeah, yeah.
Knocks them both right the fuck out. And then they wrap them up in carpets and just throw them in the water.
Yeah. I was like, what the hell? Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal, man.
It's like, geez.
So the it's one guy,
they're getting sick over it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, it's I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it. But like you said, is it something that I will watch again? Probably not.
Right. And but that's the thing with, you know, you and I, that's why I think you and I, and it's funny because whenever I'm talking to my friends, I have to go Joe Merle, because then they'll go, oh, Joe Weedman, your friend right. from second grade. So I have to say Joe Merle, and I'm sure that I sound like a broken record, and I'm like, but we're friends. And I'm sure everybody feels like, but you don't talk to him on the phone, you just text him. And I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But it's because all these weird movies, like you were like, oh, you got to see Ultraman. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so good. Do they have more? I need more. And then I saw on Head Geek 666, the, what's that guy's name? Anyway, he's on Instagram, Harry Knowles. And he had like an Ultraman doll. And I was like, oh, I want that doll. But yeah, it's all the weird stuff that you're like, except for Boone the Bounty Hunter. I could not get into it.
I might go
back and try, but yeah.
No, that's, you know, I have very few, like, I would say you and really Josh are the only two that I know I could say almost anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I know he'll find something in this or appreciate this. And then my friend Michael, he, I'm sure you've heard of him mentioned, Michael Strom. I think he's the one that told me to watch Ultraman. He's like, you got to watch this super weird movie. Then I watched it, and I was like, oh. But when you see something like that, you want to share it. It's like, well, who could I, you know, because you feel like you discovered, you know, buried treasure.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, come on, man. You got to, or it's like The Stand. Like, I found this body. You got to come see it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
You really got to see this thing. It's amazing.
Well, that's like with my wife, though, like I said, where she'll wake up. She's like, watch whatever you want. I'm going to bed. So I'm sitting in the bed. I'm watching a movie. She wakes up to Ichi the Killer. He's cutting off her leg.
Right.
Or whatever. And she's like, what the hell are you watching? And I go, it's a Japanese movie. She's like, okay, goes to bed, wakes up. I'm watching a French Diabolique. And she's like, what is going on? And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, she's like, you watch anything. And then I'm like, but this is good when I'm trying to explain like some shitty movie that I'm watching. Like, I was watching that one that I explained about on the last show, on the Rambo show, which was they broke these people out of jail, out of prison. It was a 1969 movie, so that then they could run illegal hooch, but they could catch the illegal moonshine guys.
Nice.
And it made no sense, but it was like fun. And my wife's like, what are you watching? I go, it's cool. It's got this guy in and that guy. And she's like, okay.
Yeah, it's my wife will watch some of the weird stuff with me, but at other times she's just like, what the fuck is this? Like, what are you watching, man? Yeah, yeah. Shady, I did sit with Shana the other night, though, and watch Escape from New York, which she did enjoy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was like, I even forget how kind of 80s masculine Snake Plissken is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't ever think of Snake Plissken as the one-liners, you know, the way you think of Stallone or Arnold.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal, Van Damme, those guys. But Snake Plissken had some great ones, but man, that movie is so much fun. I was so happy they put it on Criterion. And you know, it's strange because I own all of these movies, but then I'll see it pop up somewhere and I'm like, oh yeah, I got to watch that.
Well, and that's what's funny. I'm finally getting my wife into understanding digital. By the way, that Predator, for anybody, was The Predator, was $10, where I saw it on Vudu and iTunes for like $20.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't want to spend $20. And then I found it at Walmart for $10, Blu-ray with the digital copy.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. So my wife's starting to understand where, oh, I don't have to get out of bed. But although she goes, I don't need to. I just tell you, honey, go get me a movie. So, but now it's a lot. But the thing, that's why I asked you about the Apple TV, because I have Roku.
Yeah.
So I have to do everything through Movies Anywhere.
Right.
So I have a lot of other movies on iTunes, but I have to hook up my laptop to watch any iTunes movie on a big screen TV.
Oh, I see.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, that's what I like about iTunes is that if once you put the app on the Apple TV, it pulls in from everywhere.
Yeah.
So all the, and I don't have the only ones, there's certain, I think it's Lionsgate is the only ones where you get the digital copy. They don't give you the Movies Anywhere option or the iTunes option. Maybe they do, But there is one of them that it goes to Vudu. One of the distributions goes to Vudu. So I have a few movies on Vudu where I actually have to go in where it doesn't link up right.
Well, but they even had a cool thing at Walmart, just real quick. They had $5 for the Blu-ray of 48 Hours, and it came with two Vudu movies, like digital,
but
you didn't know what they were. So I'm like,
yeah,
should I get that?
Yeah, because Vudu's a Walmart thing, right? Walmart owns Vudu?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they had a whole bunch of,
yeah,
you can buy just the Vudu codes that are
right.
Like all the Harry Potters and, yeah.
Yeah, they have the stands up. Like, even they saw when I was in there the other day, they had a Spider-Man 2-pack. So they had the first one, and then you got the Vudu code for Far From Home.
Yeah.
So that one's not even available on Blu-ray yet. But if you bought the first one, if you bought Homecoming, it came with the Vudu code for the other one because they released that Vudu code the same day it hits iTunes when you get the early release.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, which was good. I watched that the other day for the first time. I enjoyed it. The new Spider-Man.
Yeah,
even though as I was watching, I was like, man, Tony Stark's kind of to blame for a lot of this bad shit that happens.
Yeah.
Like, Ultron showed up because of Tony. You know, all this bad tech that Jake Gyllenhaal's got is all because of Tony.
Well, and like all those guys explain, like, there's that old guy that was like, you know, I love that part in the first movie. He's like, he built it in a fucking cave.
Right.
Like, you telling me that you can't get it done. That guy was in there, and it was like, you know, so
cool. Oh, yeah, but he's yelling when Jeff Bridges is yelling at him.
Yeah. That little bald guy is like, yeah.
Yeah, they did a good job of tying it together, but that's the end of Spider-Man. They gave us that great post-credit scene, and now we're going to get nothing of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, oh, great.
They're going to try to explain it like Spider-Man's been in hiding this entire time.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on to our... Yeah, that's the problem with you is I can get off on tangents.
I know. Well, trust me. I was with Jason Bromley. We were done with the show, and then I kept talking about it. He's like, that has nothing to do with Goodfellas or, you know, Wolf of Wall Street. I go, I don't want to end. We're only at an hour. I want to keep going.
Yeah, him and I did that when we recorded together, too. We kind of went off on when we did the Killer Clowns episode.
Yeah.
And because it's rare, like, in my life where there's people who completely understand, like, if I fall down these weird rabbit holes of like comic book shit or, you know, weird, like with you, it's always weird, obscure movies. And it's like,
yeah.
And it's always that stuff. So,
well, then that's where, you know, I told Jason that if I was ever to do a Comic-Con, to do a show there, like I told my cousin or Colleen is really good with like, shut it up. Let's go back to aliens. Not about Star Wars. It's about aliens. Yeah. So, like, stuff like that. So I said either she needs to be with me or my cousin goes, I need to be there with a Nerf gun and just keep shooting it at you and make you get on topic. I was like, yeah. And
stay
that's why
point.
I was saying about my Rambo episode, anyway, that I was reading all my notes. I felt like it was a lot of reading. And the Quentin one I liked because I wrote it in my own words. Anyway, that's a little...
Yeah. The Rambo one was good, though. I need to see... I wanted to see Last Blood yesterday, but didn't get
around to
it.
I was going to go on Thursday, and then I got called into work, so I had to switch it. Then I was going to go last night after we did the podcast, but I was like, I'm not going to rush through the podcast. I'm going to go ahead, and so by the time we were done, it was 10:30, and I'm like, it started at 10:05. I'm not going to make it, so we'll probably go next week.
Yeah, I do want to check it out. I don't care if it's bad or not. I just love Rambo, and I love Old Man Rambo.
Yeah,
I think it's, you know, Young Rambo's great, but Old Man Rambo's great, too. In his own way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about our next movie. And it sounds like me and you might have differing opinions on this one.
Well, here's my thing is Hour of the Wolf is really, it's slow moving. I'm fine with that. You're fine with that.
Yeah.
I knew that if my wife was watching this, she'd be like, what the hell is this guy doing? He's taking his paintings on a boat. Like, what's going on? You know.
Yeah.
But it was one where, again, where you and I said, we don't know anything about it. Let's just watch it. So I kind of read the little thing, and it seemed like maybe a horror psychological thriller at the end. But it went totally different from where I thought. But a lot of that was, and it's Ingmar Bergman.
Which I didn't know, which made me really excited when I brought it up. I was like, okay, this is Bergman. And then I started reading. I was like, it was the only horror film Bergman ever did.
And now, did Bergman do the other one with Max von Sydow, The Seventh Seal?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that Bergman?
Yeah, because you almost get that same exact shot in this one where they're walking, you know, which is such a beautiful shot, where they're kind of walking with just a huge sky from horizon as high as you can see, and then just the black kind of shadow figures moving along. And in Seventh Seal, it was when it was like they were playing the music, and it was like the minstrel, kind of the gang of them.
But I think that I've only seen two Bergman films. And again, I took beginning, you know, beginning cinema, and I took contemporary cinema, but I never took like film theory like you did. So you may have been able to delve into this more than me.
Yeah.
But I was kind of like, okay, like, you know, but anyway, go ahead. I have
this. This movie in a nutshell, which, so stars Max von Sydow and Liv Ullmann, who Bergman, I think, had a baby with. I want to say they were together at one point. And
I really liked her. She was
good. They were both so good. And Max von Sydow, fuck, that dude can act. Like, yeah, man, can he act. Like, yeah. Unbelievably good. And so you have this, they live on this kind of remote island. This movie is like super surreal at the same time. I thought about it for probably 2 hours after the fact, trying to piece everything back together. And so they live on this island. He's an artist, and they decide that they kind of want to live in solitude. She's pregnant, and they kind of want to live in solitude until the baby comes.
Yeah.
And Sydow shows up after being out painting one day, and he starts telling her about all these nightmare visions that he's had about, like, spider people and insect people and man-eaters and a bird.
Taking off her hat and her face comes off. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Which once, that was so good.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit.
So you have, and so he starts almost to descend into madness, and he becomes an insomniac. They end up going to this
party.
And he's
keeping his diary. He's keeping everything written in his diary.
He's keeping, and that's the weird thing where I think a lot of people would struggle with something like this, is that characters just come and go out of nowhere with no explanation.
Yeah.
Like, this old lady shows up and starts talking to her, and she's like, you should read his diary. He keeps it under the bed. He keeps it, you know, tucked away, but read it, and it'll explain what's going on. And when we get to the end of the movie, the woman, his wife, kind of starts explaining that, and she's like, a couple times during the movie, she says, I've heard when people live together for so long, they can share the same thoughts, they'll share the same mannerisms, the same expressions. And so the movie kind of leads you to believe that she was seeing the same nightmare visions that he was and experiencing the same type of psychosis almost because they had been. But I think she said they'd only been together for like 7 years.
But what was weird was the old woman. At first, I'm trying to not trying to beat it to the end, but I'm trying to go, okay, this old woman, she's a ghost. She's given like hints of something. And then through the middle of when they're at the dinner scene, I start going, maybe it's like, what was that movie? The movie with Nicole Kidman where they're in the hotel, apartment.
The Others?
The Others. Yeah. I was like, maybe it's like The Others and they're the dead ones and all those people are alive and they're, you know, and I was like, oh, maybe it's like that or something.
Yeah.
And then it got, you know, that guy that we're jumping ahead, but that guy walking away, boyfriend, Victoria's boyfriend, and then he walks up the wall.
That was so
and then
good.
Up the ceiling. Oh,
yeah, that was so good.
It kind of blends into, like, went away into the shadow and then comes out of the shadow. It's like, oh.
And that's, you know, outside of the story alone, this movie is so beautifully shot. And I love Bergman's use of shadows and light. And one of my favorite sequences is once he's truly, and, you know, once he's going full crazy and they're staying awake and he starts explaining to her about the Hour of the Wolf and what it is. And so the title comes from The Hour of the Wolf and kind of Swedish folklore about this time between, I think it's 3 and 5 a.m., when the most people die, the most babies are born, and like crazy people see the most demons. They really explain it like a bad time. Yeah. And when he's standing there talking, he's sitting there talking to her, she's sitting by the window, and he keeps lighting the matches and just holding them out.
And at first he was like bringing it real close to his eye, and I'm like, he's gonna burn himself. Like, what's going on? And it was
the lighting in that scene is so good. And then I was like, the more I thought about it, I was like, that's such a beautiful representation. At least for me, the way I interpreted it is that the light is his little bit of sanity that he has left, and he's trying to maintain that tiny little sliver of what he has before being totally consumed by darkness.
Yeah, and like, his hope of, like, the sun's coming, it's coming.
Yeah, like, oh, it'll come. And he's like, do you remember when night was for dreaming and for sleeping, but now it's a place of crazy and madness and all this stuff?
Yeah.
But that was so cool, and I just love, because it seemed like Bergman really used, I mean, natural lighting for the most part. There wasn't a lot of, I'm sure there were in the castle and the set pieces and stuff, but in those particular scenes, And like I said, where they're walking on the beach, like that all seemed like it just was what it was.
Yeah, it was. It was filmed beautifully, and it was. But what did I read? That part where that was where it got weird. I mean, it got weird through the whole thing.
Right, the whole thing was weird.
When he killed that boy, it was so creepy.
Oh, fuck.
With that boy like sinking into the water. It was almost like I said about Night of the Hunter. When you see her through the water,
yeah.
Like that's just creepy. Like her in the car.
Well, and he watches him sink, and then the kid floats back up, and you see like his hair on the surface, kind of like flower out almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he starts sinking again, and you're just like, oh, man.
And I was shocked that they got away with killing that kid like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, the kid is hanging on his back, and he's like crushing the kid into the rocks behind him.
Yeah.
And then he just, what does he do? Choke him.
And then he picks up
a rock. Oh, yeah. He slams the rock like a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Violently. And he tells her, I've never told anyone this, and you know, you got to keep it between us. But yeah, he violently beats that kid's skull in. But we don't get a lot of explanation of why the kid went nuts and attacked him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like digging around looking in his boot and stuff while Bonsaito was fishing.
Yeah.
And then, but then, it just takes a turn for the worse. And his description of what his parents did to him when he was a kid was fucked up too.
Yeah.
Like locked him in the closet and told him there was a little person that lived in the shadows that would come out.
Yeah, so he climbed up and then fell down and then was waiting for his feet to be bit off, like his toes and
right.
Yeah,
it's just
It
was just madness, man. And the entire sequence at the castle was also super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The way all the conversations are going, you know, and his use of the camera was so great, like switching
it was right up on him and it was back and forth and people are in. Two people are having a conversation on the other side of the table, and then he's trying to they're trying to ask him questions, and they're making fun of him and laughing at him.
Right.
And it's like, why do you invite a painter that you're going to make fun of? You said you like him. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, and he gives a good description about, you know, his relationship with art, and they have that talk about that. But then the woman takes him upstairs, and she has a picture of, and
Victoria.
We should bring up Victoria Vogel, I think it was.
Yeah,
is his former lover that he had documented in this diary and these amazing this amazing time they had together, being on the run, like running away from her husband or something like that.
Yeah.
And this other woman's like, oh, yeah. And she's like, oh, I need a lover. She shows the scar and she's like, I have this scar from this guy. And maybe you could show me, you know, you could bring me, you know, reignite my fires. And his wife's
she's like
what
that,
the fuck?
She's like, that gets me going, but pretty soon that scar will fade.
Right.
Won't get me going. And then she's like, can you help me off with this?
Yeah.
And then he walks away and then she's like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And she even tells his wife, she's like, oh, I've got a little bit of control over him. I've got a piece of your husband.
Yeah.
And then once we get to the end of the movie, you know, you realize they're all demons and ghosts and stuff. And that makes a little more sense why she would say some weird shit like that. Because you're right. It's super, so bizarre. So strange. And then the, you had kind of mentioned it earlier, but I love the, well, I'm trying to think if there's anything before we get to the end. Because I do want to spend some time at the end. Because I love the end.
Let me see.
Movie.
Well, where he shoots. So then he shot her after that, when the sun's going to come up.
Oh, yeah,
he shoots her like three or four times, and then he's like, that last shot was a fatal shot, or however it said, you know, from his diary.
Which was so interesting, though, that the guy gave her the gun and said, this is to protect yourself from little animals. Like, he was almost diminishing. He knew what he was going to do with the gun, and he was almost diminishing the value of his wife.
Yeah, she's like, let's lock it up. He's like, no, we'll keep it here or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God.
And then he just out of nowhere, and because the guy tells him, well, Victoria is going to be at the party. He's like, you know, he's overwhelmed with this notion. And he's kind of crazy at this point. You know, he's kind of gone nuts.
Yeah.
And whether it be from lack of sleep or the presence of these ghost characters. But, he shoots his pregnant wife three times.
Bang, bang, bang. She lives. But, at the time I was like, holy shit. Like, what's going on? And then, like, it went to, was that the one? Went to black. Maybe it was the lure. When it went to black and I thought, is that the end? No, it was that one.
Yeah.
And then it came back and it did some more. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, this might be the end of it. And then we jump forward where now he's kind of running to the party. Yeah. They invite him. And then once he gets there at all, this is where it really gets weird.
Yeah.
And
it's all David Lynchian where that guy's walking up the wall. And,
but how good was that? So cut good. Was seamless.
That was like, so good. Yeah.
Yeah, like it wasn't even, I shouldn't say the cut was seamless, but the set design was seamless.
Yeah.
Like it looked identical. yeah, to the way it was. Because, I mean, yeah, they just built another one where he could, you know, walk on the floor, and then they set it down. But I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
But even before that, the guy put the makeup all over him. He's like, oh, you got to look good.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on? Like, put the lipstick on. And then I'm like, is he making him the woman? Is he going to be like, you're Victoria? And it's like, oh, my God, I'm Victoria this whole time. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, so. And he puts the makeup on him and powders his face and puts eyeliner on him and gives him some clothes to wear. And they all keep telling him, like, oh, if you, I know where Victoria is at. Well, no, first he had sat down to eat with the old lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, this whole party. And he's like, isn't there a party going on? She's like, no, nothing, but please sit down and eat with me. Oh, Victoria's through that way. And then he runs into the makeup guy. And then he runs into Victoria's boyfriend, the wall walker.
Yeah.
And he, I forget exactly what he said to him.
He said, like I'm going to be, I'm going to go off. Yeah. I'm going to be jealous about you being with her, but I understand. I'm going to hear all about it.
Well, no, he said he was going to stand by the bed. He's like, I'm going to stand by the bed and watch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that weirded me out. He's like, I'll be right by your bedside the entire time, but I'm going to be jealous.
Those Europeans are more open to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, hey, bang my old lady, but I'm going to sit and watch in the corner.
Yeah.
But calm down, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you relax with that. And so then he runs into what was my favorite part of this whole thing, and it was the old lady with the face.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so gnarly.
Yeah, it was like she goes, I got to take my hat off. And you're going, oh, shit. And then you're watching. And then you're like, well, her face didn't come on. And then all of a sudden her face starts peeling. She starts peeling her face off.
She peels her whole.
And then takes her eyes out.
And puts them in like cups of like champagne. Water, whatever it was.
Yeah. And you're like, holy shit. Yeah, that's where I was like, it's almost like that other movie that we said that we got from, I think that was from, no, that was from Will. That weird movie with the girl from Poltergeist.
Oh.
That's one that needs to be dissected. Like, this one could be dissected and figure out what everything meant.
Right.
That's how that one is. It's like, it's going to have to be.
Yeah, that one was awesome. What was it called? Anguish?
It's called Anguish. Yeah.
Anguish, yeah. That was super cool.
Yeah.
But that one, yeah, you're right. We could spend hours probably frame by frame. Like, okay, the same thing that with this. And, you know, with Bergman, in a lot of circles, Bergman's considered one of the greatest to ever do it. To ever get behind the camera and, you know, tell the stories the way that they were. I don't know. I was going to say
usually him and Fellini, right?
Yeah.
They're like the ones that are,
yeah. You know, your Fritz Langs of the world, the people that it seems like no matter what they touch, they had a unique vision and they were able to tell these incredible stories. So the old lady, pulling her face off, the effect was so good.
Yeah.
Like I was really impressed with how well done that was.
And yeah, well, especially like I was thinking too, 68, like you guys did Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like this came out like around then. Like I wonder if other people started going, you know, if all these, well, like I said, in 1969, I watched that Corpse Grinders. Did you watch that yet?
Corpse Grinders is great.
Yeah. And so I watched that one and then, and that's one where it's like just cheap horror. And then even that, the one that you told me, the children shouldn't play with dead things.
Yeah.
That's the same thing where it's like, you know, just a weird, you know.
Well, what year was, let me see if I can find it. I'm trying to think. I want to say Blood Feast was.
That was 63.
Yeah, that Herschel Gordon Lewis. And that was.
That was crazy for 63. Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy for today, let alone for 63, but. Yeah, and there was some other stuff. But Feast is on Tubi right now.
But all those colors pop. Yeah, I saw it on, I forget where I found it. I probably saw it on Tubi, but those colors pop, and that was another one that I watched. My wife goes, what are you watching? And I'm like, yo, hang on.
Yeah, but even he's stuff like, I mean, away. Monster of Go-Go was 65. Let's see. I haven't seen Blast Off Girls. This Stuff Will Kill You was 71. I mean, the guy has done some... he's done some great things. I was trying to see some
that's
of the
all Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Yeah, Herschel Gordon Lewis, The Wizard of Gore, but that was quite a bit later. Well, no, not that much later. That was 70. Yeah, he always did some wild stuff. But I think you might be onto something in that people were starting to explore more with the effects around time.
Well, and I guess if you think about it, it was the, you know, they said, you know, Butch Cassidy or Bonnie and Clyde, that was where they said, let's forget about the Hays Code or what, not the Hays Code, not that it was still going, but more of that stuff. We can go outside the box. We can do whatever.
Yeah.
So that was like 68. And then they're, then everybody's like, oh, let's do stuff, you know. But also they all had the, you could do a grindhouse movie and you didn't have to go through anybody. You could just release your
right.
movie. So
just put it out and make it happen, which
but,
is so much
yeah,
good shit.
I'm enjoying, you were talking about those horror movies. I'm enjoying like the Giallo movies that
oh,
you
yeah.
turned me on to, or like that one that I told you was the Blood and Lace or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
Blood
called.
And Black Lace.
Yeah, that yeah. one was really cool.
All the Bava stuff is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that so. Stuff is, and you know, it's so interesting how you go down those trails and you follow those paths. Because a lot of this stuff, I would say I really started getting into the Italian stuff and kind of the outside of the U.S. horror probably around like 11th grade in high school. Uh-huh. And then I would have to go to, I think Suncoast Video was still around. And a
yeah,
lot of that shit,
you'd
still
there.
Have to
yeah.
special order. I miss Suncoast Video. That was
yeah. And Tower Records, you could go there.
Yeah.
And you
see,
had
we
like,
didn't we didn't have a Tower Records.
Oh, you know what Jason Bromley gave me? I don't know if you have one yet, but it's his copy of Green Lantern.
Oh,
made,
nice.
Movie.
Yes. That fucker was supposed to send me one. He's been telling me for like months he's gonna send me one.
I did give him two those movie guys stickers, and I gave him the poster, and I gave him the Jack Nicholson.
Oh,
he
nice.
He was like, is this, you just showing this to me? I go, no, I got a Freddy Krueger. You can have the, you know, you can nice. Have Jack Nicholson. And he's like, oh, okay, thanks. And then I bought him brought him a G.I. Joe mug from, not a mug. When you're a kid, lunchbox.
Thermos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I have a few old, I actually have an 82 Dark Crystal lunchbox, but it didn't have the thermos, though. It's like, man.
Oh, man.
The thermoses are the hardest things to find because everybody loses the thermos.
I have my original Star Wars lunchbox, and it's got the thermos in it with 3PO and R2.
Oh, that's super cool.
It's like way
cool. That's
super
cool. So back to the end of this movie.
I sold it on eBay. Oh, okay. Yeah. She sold my lunchbox on eBay.
Oh.
she didn't. I still have it. But earlier when I was talking to you, I was looking in this camera. And it was my computer was open, so it was going off my computer
yeah.
camera. That's why for 30 minutes I was talking this.
I figured you were just looking at the screen over there. I was like, that's all right. So, and then we get this really weird scene at the end of Hour of the Wolf where he finds Victoria. Was it Victoria or Veronica?
It's Victoria. Where is it? Yeah, no, Veronica Vogel.
Yeah, Veronica. Where he finds her on what looks almost like a slab you would find in a morgue somewhere. Like a... I don't even know what they like a gurney.
Yeah, she's like covered up with a white sheet.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, she's dead. How did she die? And
right, and then you get these slow kind of intimate, like him rubbing his hand like down her legs and stuff like that, and across her body, like touches her face. And then out of nowhere, she wakes up, and then she's like laughing at him. And then soon he's surrounded by everybody, and they're all just laughing at him, which is a very uncomfortable sequence.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Super weird. And they're like, yeah, do it. Like, go ahead. Ha, 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 ha. You got the whole gang of these demons all just hanging out, laughing in this dude's face, which I assume are the same when he talked about, like, the insect man and the bird man.
Yeah, like the bird guy. Yeah, I think it was a guy with a big nose, whatever it was. It looked like a bird or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they all start laughing, and he takes off. Did his wife show up at the castle? I can't remember if she showed up.
No, she talked about, then she's reading from the diary, or she's telling her story later of, I did survive.
Yeah.
He came back from there. He walked around the outside for a while. I kind of followed
him
to make sure everything was okay.
Yeah, but she was hiding. She's like, because, she heard him go in, right? And she hid for a while, and then he was just wandering around.
And
pacing.
Then then he walked outside, and then she followed him, yeah.
Yeah, and he walks into the woods where... She now can see him being attacked by, I think it was the Veronica's boyfriend was the one who did the attacking.
Uh-huh.
Was like, cut his face or something like that. And then he ends up being killed and just kind of disappears. He's just gone. Like she looks over into the woods and he's just not there anymore.
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, and then he became a ghost demon, whatever. Yeah.
And then,
so, I mean, it was cool. My thing was... I didn't know that this was a brainy movie that I'd have to use my brain for. That's where I was expecting, like, that's why I was trying to go this. And then I was like, wait, that guy just walked up a wall. This girl just pulled her face off. Okay, wait a minute. You know, and this woman showed up out of nowhere, showed her boob, and is like, look, I'm back. And I'm like, wait a minute.
So, that was, Veronica showing up for the first time. And I think I knew, as soon as I saw it was a Bergman movie, I was like, okay, this is going to be, I need to put my different hat on. For watching this movie,
Yes, because yeah, I should have. Yeah. Yeah.
This is not Plan 9 from Outer Space. This is something that's Bergman's always, I don't even want to say highbrow, because I think anybody can watch it. And you know, I've never liked the notion that you need some sort of special skill to dissect movies or anything like that.
Right.
I think just certain people enjoy that aspect of some movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they like to sit and think and really dig into it. And
well, and then there's the other end of it that I talk about all the time, but not on your show. Robert Rodriguez with the dog and El Mariachi.
Right.
And that college kid going, hey, man, that dog means like now he's become an animal. And he's like, no, Carlos had a dog, so we use a dog.
Yeah.
Like, I like the dog. I put him in the movie.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, like sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
And that was, you know, that whole generation of guerrilla filmmakers that, you know, some of it was just that. It was like we just had to do what we had to do. And even, you know, I wanted to bring this up to you because I thought it was so interesting. And that Rob Zombie talk, when he was talking about the actual process and you know, getting a movie made. And we talk a lot about, man, like either this was fucked up or why did they do that? Why did they do that? And I forget what he was making. Oh, he said it was something that never actually made it to full production, but they were, I mean, making this movie, but it never got distributed. I don't even know which one it was. He didn't mention it. But he said every single week, the studio would come back and be like, oh, can you get this guy in it? Like, whatever was number one at the box office.
Wow, Yeah,
he said they were making this movie, and he was talking to somebody, and he says, hey, I think it was Private Parts was number one at the box office.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I guarantee you when I go in on Monday, they're going to be like, is there any way we can get Howard Stern in this movie? And he said he shows up and they get notes that says, Howard Stern, we got to get Howard Stern to be in this thing. Like, wow. And for us as viewers, we often question that, like, why?
Yeah.
And that David Lynch book I listened to, he said the same thing. He's like, as soon as you take the control away from the director, you're doing the movie a disservice. You're not seeing the director's vision.
Well, it's like that. I talked about it with Jason Bromley, and he was talking about when he tried to sell a script, but on that movie Big Picture with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
It's all about, he writes the script, it's his baby, and then they go, could we put it in a, like in a beach house? And he's like, but it's in the snow, it's a really deep film. No, let's put it in a beach house with a bunch of girls in bikinis.
Right.
Okay, I'll do that. He changes that, and then they're like, could we have, like, action? And then all of a sudden you end up with surf ninjas, and you're like, what the hell happened?
What happened to my movie? So, the same thing happened in the current season of GLOW, where they
I haven't finished it yet.
Oh, it was good. Yeah, the daughter's script. And they start changing things. She's like, but that's not even remotely close to what I wanted it to be. Like, that doesn't make any sense with these characters. Oh, no, but it'll be good. It'll be good.
Yeah.
And so you have these non-creative people trying to have huge input on the creative process, and it just, especially with someone like a David Lynch, who, for the most part, they've given him some pretty good freedom.
Yeah, and even sometimes with those bubbles, though, they just pop. Like I don't remember what defeated GLOW originally, but it was going pretty good. I remember it was pretty big, and then all of a sudden just dropped out. I think it was either WWF was just overtook it,
One of those. And it was funny though, also listening to Rob Zombie, they were talking about some of their favorite kind of movies, and he said he's got a vault at his house, which I remember him being on MTV Cribs, and he had so much cool shit and all these like laser discs and VHS and Blu-rays and stuff. But Joe Rogan was asking him, like, what are some of your, you know, favorite movies? And one of Rob Zombie's, he's like, I just fucking love Napoleon Dynamite. He's like,
cool.
Which is so weird, you know, you think about Rob Zombie, this guy, he's like, when they opened that movie and the credits were done with food, he was like, this is fucking genius. Like, this is just, and that's where, you know, it's great now right now for smaller independent filmmakers because the distribution is so much easier. You can get your movies out to people quickly, but I feel the flip side of that coin, there is so much content out there. It's easy to get lost. You're just, something comes, it goes.
Well, it's the same thing with our podcast. Like, I try to promote the podcast. And then I go, I get about 30 listens, but there's so many podcasts out there. Who's going to, I want to listen to a movie podcast. And they're going to go to the bigger guys and then come down to me.
And there's so many movie podcasts out there.
Yeah.
Not even just podcasts. There's so many movie podcasts.
It's the, but the thing, it's like, you know, Tangerine was made with an iPhone.
Yeah.
And then that other movie that, that guy, the Ocean's 11 guy.
Oh yeah. The Unsane.
Unsane
was done on that, which was a good movie.
But, But of course, like, I think it was you that said it, or I was talking to people. So he did it with an iPhone 10 or an iPhone 8. But of course, he had all the expensive equipment on
right to go around
and a Steadicam and all this dolly stuff. So
and lenses and shit that fit right over top of the iPhone. Yeah, it's not just your iPhone.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, you can get all the adaptive stuff. But anybody can go out and make a movie. And if you tell a good story, I mean, people will. I mean, Napoleon Dynamite is a great example. Like, that movie still resonates, and I still feel bad for even though he got a career out of it. John, is it Heater? Yeah, John Heater.
Yeah, John
Heater. I think I read one time he got paid $1,500 for the movie and no royalties whatsoever.
Wow.
So all of his face all over everything.
Wow. That's like the Gilligan's Island thing where none of them knew about royalty, knew about nothing. So they, you know.
Or even Star Wars. People. I mean, they didn't get any of those likenesses for anything that was put out. Like, now, Heater did get, you know, he made some movies after that. So it was a good launching pad. And I'm sure he made some money off the other stuff. But
and I think that's why you and I like these little films or these older films, because it's the story of making them. Like, you know, like Corpse Grinders. Somebody said, I got this wild idea. We kill people. We sell cat food to the cats.
Right.
Then that's not the end of it. The other part of it is the cats eat the humans. Then they get a craving for more humans and they kill more humans.
Right.
And it's like, it's just so good. And it's like, okay, I respect that. And just like children shouldn't play with dead things. I'm watching those guys going, okay, that girl's a really good actress. And I looked her up and I'm like, oh, she's been in other things. Like the main.
Yeah. Like the main lady. Girl.
Yeah. And I'm like, but you're just like, okay, they just went out in the woods and like filmed a movie and was like, okay.
Yeah. Cause I think that was somewhere in like Florida or Louisiana. Somewhere that they had, which I don't know if I told you, but this Thursday coming up, I'm going to watch the Evil Dead 2 with Bruce Campbell. They're doing
cool. Yeah. I heard you talking about
a special
about
showing of an evening with Bruce Campbell and the Evil Dead 2. And that's another great example. You know, he's hometown hero, being a Michigan native, all those guys. But they were just like, hey, I mean, I think Bruce Campbell's parents like put a second mortgage on their house to give him the rest of the money to make the movie.
Wow. Yeah.
Like to believe in your kid like that is impressive enough, but they were like, fuck, let's just go make this weird movie in the woods.
That's that thing, like we said, Robert Rodriguez using a wheelchair instead of a Steadicam because he doesn't have a dolly and stuff. So he goes, hey, we can use a wheelchair. And the stuff of like Bruce Campbell, what he learned from Evil Dead, he was talking about when he was on Burn Notice, they like a squib went off. It was Jeffrey Donovan was on his knees, was going to get shot by a guy. And that guy was supposed to get shot in the chest by something. And the guy's chest blew up and the squib hit Jeffrey Donovan. But they didn't have a protection there. There was no lines of like, be this far back. And he said that thing went off and luckily it didn't go through his head or whatever. Yeah. And he was okay. But he said, I start yelling at the guys and I go, no, I want these guys working with me. He goes, I was running through a door. The door splintered, got in my eye because they didn't set it off in time. They didn't, you know, set off too early. And it's all that stuff that he knows from doing it. Like, I've done it before, you know.
Well, yeah, because when they made those movies, everybody was every role, you know. You had to learn it and contribute where you could.
And that's why with Desperado, Robert Rodriguez was like, I took a $10,000 class and learned how to do Steadicam, so I can do my own Steadicam. I don't need anybody. I can do this. And they're like, no, we have other people. And he's like, all right. It was hard for him to let go.
Which Desperado is so good. Phil and I were just talking about that. Fucking love that movie.
So
I love that scene of him with Danny Trejo following Antonio Banderas, and he's, you know, the blood on the brick.
And she's coming up.
She's coming the other way. And he sees her eyes get real big, and he just spins around. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Well, that's like also on a John Woo thing. John Woo was talking about how Nicolas Cage and Tom Cruise had different, like Tom Cruise, I think, moves better. So Nicolas Cage, he did at a different rate when he did slow motion. Tom Cruise had really good motion. So he did him at like the slowest to make it really fluid and cool. And then he said like John Travolta was this way and this guy, you know.
Yeah.
So like everybody has their own thing, but.
It's love movie making, man. Love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too.
Okay, so we did Hour of the Wolf. You have any final thoughts or anything about?
No, just, you know, here's my thing. So I go, is anybody going to, I was thinking I was going to be like, should we change these movies and do something else? And I was like, no. But, you know, people, they're interesting and they're, like you said, they're good. And the Hour of the Wolf was really good. And Lure, they're both good. Okay, I'll shut up. Yes, they're good. Nothing else that they should know. Get the Criterion Channel because you get, you know, High Noon, Stagecoach.
Yeah, so much
The
good.
Kid.
Yeah, the Criterion Channel is amazing.
All the Charlie Chaplin stuff's on there. All the Akira Kurosawa. They have all those Lone Wolf and Cub. Those are all on there. All the Godzillas are on there. Like, the everything.
And I was just reading here real quick, though, that Hour of the Wolf, when it was released, I mean, wasn't critically received. Like, Ebert, well, he gave it 3 out of 4, calling it a difficult film and not altogether a successful one. Renata Alder from the New York Times said, not one of Bergman's greatest films, but positively reviewed the acting of Sydow and Ullman. Yeah. But then you have some other ones that, again, hailed Sydow as gothically brilliant.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I mean, it currently holds a 89 on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.5 on IMDb.
It was good, but know that you're going to be throwing some curveballs and have to go, wait, I got to.
Right. Yeah.
I got to decipher this.
Yeah. It's one that I want to go through again and even.
Because it's like we said, you can still watch it just like that Anguish movie. You can watch it. It's a good movie. But then you go, I wonder what that meant.
Right.
And you want to dive into it.
And with this, I even told Shana while we were watching Hour of the Wolf, I was like, fuck, I wish I could watch this without subtitles for two reasons. Like, one, the subtitles always brighten the bottom of the screen, especially with the matches. That scene with the matches I loved so much. And it kept like brightening it up. But then, you know, your eyes are like reading, then going up, reading, then going up, reading, and then going up. And so I wish I could just sit there and really, really absorb it all in and take it all in.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, with the Lure. Yeah, sometimes I usually like to watch it subtitled because you can see the acting in the real language.
Right. Well, of course. If I have a choice between a dub and a subtitle, I'll always.
But if it's something that you've seen a lot, then you can go, okay, I'm going to watch dubbed. You know, Raid or whatever, you know.
Like Seven Samurai, I think I could watch without the subtitles. I already know the story so well that I could watch it. All 4 hours of it, I could watch without the subtitles and still know exactly what's going on.
Tell everybody what it meant,
Yeah, so so that's it, man. That's our Criterion Horror. And I even thought the same thing after I watched both movies. I was like, are these the best choices for us to do? But then I was like, you know what? Yeah, it is the best choices because it's the ones we picked.
Well, and it's like you said, where depending on what you name the episode, but it's like me, I think people just hunt and peck for what they want. So it's like you and me, like you may not listen to Joe Rogan's podcast, but you'll go, oh, Mel Gibson's on, I'll listen to that. Oh, Rob Zombie's on, I'll listen to that.
Yeah.
But you're not going to listen to everyone. And so with the movies, they might go, Rambo franchise, no thanks. But they might go, oh, Quentin Tarantino influences. Okay, I'll listen to that one. So,
yeah, so you kind of give what you're looking for, but... When it comes to what I'll watch anything at least once. Anything.
Yeah, and
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and that's like me right now where I'm just like, you know, at one point I was going to do for my show, I guess I'll explain my show. Are we at the end now?
Yeah, man. Do your plug. Do your thing.
So my show is My Celluloid Heart, and it's about my love of film. And so at one point I was like, well, I want to talk. I'm so passionate about movies that when I talk about them, I want people to hear my passion and maybe go, I haven't heard of this movie, but I want to go see it now because, you know, I've never seen Goodfellas, but these guys talk about it so great. And so I wanted that. And then also that whenever I talk to any of my friends, like I told the story of, we went and saw Wayne's World and I said, hey, do you know, Dana Carvey plays the drums. He really plays the drums. And my buddy goes, my friend Bob plays the drums. I go, who's Bob? He goes, exactly. I said, okay, I get it. You don't care about stupid facts. So so on my show, I have like movies, like two movies combined together with the central theme or topic. And then also I have some facts in there.
Yeah, and usually what you've been watching lately.
Yeah. And then I throw that in because, you know, on those movie guys, you guys talk about that. And I find that exciting. And I'm like, that's cool because then I can be like, oh, yeah, I was thinking of checking that out. Now I will. And then for me, though, I want people to know if I'm the host of the show, they go, this guy's talking about Goodfellas. He really loves Goodfellas. I hate Goodfellas. Why am I going to listen to that? Then they can go, oh, okay, he likes these kind of things.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and you can get it everywhere, right? iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes, Spotify, all those, Google all the Play, podcatchers.
All of them. All the podcatchers.
Yeah. Podbean. I'm on Podbean, so you can go there. And then I'm on Facebook. So My Cellular Heart Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And my Twitter I need to change because that's number four, The Love of Film. And I should change it to something to go with the podcast, right. My Cellular Heart. Or it's Phil the Movie Man. So either way.
Ah, right on, man. Yeah, so check out My Cellular Heart. I listen to it every couple of weeks whenever it drops. And you and I have discussed possibly in the future, if we can figure out the timing, doing maybe once a month, doing a couple Criterion movies.
Yeah, yeah. At first you were like, I got this channel now. Maybe we should do a Criterion podcast. And I was like, okay, I'm in. I'll pay. We'll do it.
Yeah.
And then you were like, wait. Calm down. I got two going on right now. I could just wait.
Yeah,
like,
already right. doing two then, shows a week is,
yeah.
it's a lot. We, can't even imagine adding a third right
yeah,
now.
And then we said, no, we'll just do like once a month. We can be like, here's what was on Criterion. You know, we can do the Jailbreak stuff that they have right now.
Since it's once a month, we'll call it Criterion, period.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. It'll be our period.
And we could do that anywhere. I could throw it in on my regular weeks or I could throw it in between.
And so, that way we can explore even more than just horror, you know, because there's so much good shit on Criterion that we could do. Like, you know, you had talked about, and then I went back and rewatched Police Story. Like, doing both of those back-to-back would be...
so good. Yeah.
Would be a ton of fun.
Did you watch any of those making-ofs that he had?
I did, no. I haven't watched
them. The stunts?
Yeah, I haven't watched them yet. Cool. But I did... You know, I don't know what. Maybe I did. I feel like I watched something where they were showing just how crazy that dude is when it comes to his...
He was showing how, like, the thing, like, he's got strings tied to this, like, a table or a chair. And so when somebody strikes him with something, he pulls his hands apart, and that pulls the chair apart. It's all scored.
Ah, that's
cool.
And
it pulls it, and they put dust on it, so it looks, you know, how it looks like dust and all that. So, yeah.
Oh, that's
really neat. It's like he goes, we just do it old school. Like, there's new ways to do it, but this is the easiest way to do it.
So, and it works.
Really cool.
Looks amazing. Yeah. And if you want to get in contact with us, it's IHOH Podcast and all the social media platforms and IHOHpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd be so kind as to jump on Apple Podcasts, leave a rate and review. That would be greatly appreciated. And for the International House of Horrors Podcast, I've been Joe Merle.
And I'm the other one. I'm Philip.
And we'll be back next week with more things. Terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre.